This is Connected Nation, a podcast focused on all things broadband. From closing the digital divide to improving your internet speeds, we talk technology topics that impact all of us, our families, and our communities. On today's podcast, we examine groundbreaking research that looks at digital isolation among older Americans. We will talk with those behind the report, which found that 22 million U.S. seniors lack the high-speed internet access they need. And thanks to the pandemic, it's a connectivity problem that we now know has had, and likely continues to have, devastating effects. I'm Jessica Denson, and this is Connected Nation. I'm Jessica Denson. Today we're talking about a recently released report called Aging Connected, Closing the Connectivity Gap for Older Americans. The report explores just how prevalent the digital divide is among U.S. seniors, and for the first time, quantifies the ramifications of that lack of access. The report was authored in partnership by the Humana Foundation and Older Adults Technology Services, also referred to as OATS. Today, the CEO of the Humana Foundation, Walter Woods, and the founder and executive director of OATS, Dr. Tom Camber, join us to discuss what their organizations learned and why the report's findings are critical to creating positive change for older Americans. Welcome, Walter and Tom.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm really excited to talk to you both. Obviously, it's a very serious issue, but before we dive into this report, I want to give our listeners a little understanding and background about each of the organizations that you lead so they can understand why this report was done and why it's important. Let's begin with you, Tom. Older Adults Technology Service may not have been something everybody has heard about, but you've been around for about 16 years. So tell us a little bit about your mission, how you got started, what the group does, that type of thing.
I'm happy to do that. And we started here in New York City, in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. I was the founding executive director back then, and had been tutoring just a single older woman as a bit of a hobby for about a year. I was helping her with technology, and I realized that when older people learn technology, it can be super transformational in their lives. And I remember working with this woman, her name was Pearl, and she got a bus shelter in front of her building as a result of getting online. And I thought at the time, you know, a bus shelter can seem like a pretty minor thing, but if you just think about the number of people that stand under it every year and get out of the rain and how practical it is, that when a person in their 80s is able to make something like that happen and use technology, it's kind of a big deal. And we don't always recognize that. So I started teaching classes in a low-income community in Brooklyn in public housing buildings, just looking at the seniors who were offline, because back then only 26% of seniors were using the internet. And people really picked it up. They really loved it. They were learning the mainstream technologies like email and web browsers. And one thing led to another. We started getting money from the city council and from foundations. And after several years of, having a hard time paying the rent, I was eventually able to make a career out of this. And then over the years, we've just grown, you know, first as a citywide operation in New York, and then to five other states. We're in Texas and Colorado, Maryland, and California now. And we've got a national footprint, and we have 82 staff, and we worked with 50,000 people online last year. So it's been really an incredible run, and we're making a difference. And I have to say, if you're a nonprofit leader, that's all you really want, right? So it's a labor of love.
Did you find yourself drawn to this population in some way because you are focused on older Americans?
At first, no. I mean, at first it was completely random. I didn't know very many older people aside from my grandparents. And so the phone rang and I picked it up. And here was this woman telling me that she thought she might not be welcome at a web launch party. And that just pricked up my ears a little bit. And I thought, I can learn something from this person. And what I learned from her not only was about technology, but it was also really about aging. She was the first person that I became friends with. I was maybe 38 years old at the time, and she was in her 80s. And we became fast friends. And I remember we used to go to breakfast in her assisted living every week. And I started getting excited about aging. And I know it sounds terrible, but we live in such an age segregated society that I didn't know any older people that weren't relatives. And so it was an education for me. And it felt like a whole new world was opening up to me. in terms of what was exciting about being around older people. And now, of course, it's been an incredible enrichment for my life. It's probably the most valuable experience that I've ever had as a professional and as a person. And yet, when I was just, if you had gone back to just the day before I met her, I would never have predicted this.
That's a great story. And I love that you called what the woman did with the bus stop cover super transformational, how she learned that technology could have that impact in her life. I also want to move now to Walter. Walter, you're the CEO of the Humana Foundation. As such, you lead, and I'm going to quote here from your bio, all efforts to improve and sustain positive health outcomes, including partnership development, strategic investments, and community relationships. That's a hefty task. Many of the decisions you make impact people now and well into the future. Share with our listeners a little bit about the foundation and how you approach that.
Absolutely. Yes, it is a hefty task. The Humana Foundation aspires to health equity for all. And we do that by co-creating communities where leadership, culture and systems work to improve and sustain positive health outcomes. We achieve this by investing in holistic solutions that create food security, social connectedness, financial asset security, and post-secondary attainment and sustaining employment.
And also sticking a little bit of the background that I've read about you, that you really shifted the focus since you started leading the Humana Foundation to a funding focus to an investment focus. Explain a little bit about what that means.
Sure. Our past funder approach really focused on activities completed as a success metric for the dollars that we deployed into communities. Now our investor approach focuses on results achieved and cost per gain for those dollars that we invest in community. Additionally, we have collaborative partner relationships that focus on bringing people together to create results as a group.
Do you feel that that approach is a much more organic and effective way of looking at work among charities and philanthropy?
We do. I think we all know that it takes more than one group to make change. And so we really encourage people to work across the sectors in our communities, because that's really when solutions become sustainable.
And staying with you for a moment before we get into the report, what led to the Humana Foundation's decision to work with OATS on this study? OATS, of course, is the acronym for Older Adults Technology Services, just a reminder for our audience. But what led you in the direction of working together?
Well, there's strong alignment between OATS social impact work around technological connectivity in older adults and the foundation's goal of social connectedness as a determinant of health. How connectivity impacts the health of older adults is more pronounced than ever before. It goes beyond loneliness, affecting seniors' ability to receive critical health services and resources. And partnering with OATS to create this report gives us a framework for addressing existing inequities and connectivity that represent a real barrier to health.
Yeah, I will say, as our mission as a nonprofit, we have seen that in the field, older Americans struggling with this. So we have seen this in real time, and I've talked to many of these people. So let's get into this report. It really impacted me when I read it. What made your organization, Tom, decide that the issue of connectivity in particular among older Americans needed to be examined closer?
We've been working on connectivity at OATS since our early days and trying to get more attention to this problem. And simultaneously, we've been practitioners on the ground trying to help people use technology with whatever resources are available to them. So in a way, we've had kind of two streams over the years where, on the one hand, we're trying to get people to have more access. But on the other hand, we're needing to help people right now. And that requires, you know, finding people that are online and giving them trainings and such. Over the last few years, as connectivity has become more ubiquitous in the younger population, we realized that there wasn't any really clear data or study that showed exactly what the gap was between young and old in the United States regarding broadband connections. And the challenge with broadband connections is, if you don't have broadband at home, the entire digital universe is shut off to you for the most part. You can't do Zoom calls, you can't do e-commerce, you can't do online banking. So it's a kind of a gateway for the universe of activities and opportunities and benefits that technology brings to us. And I started OATS in 2004, and 16 years later, we knew that the numbers were bad. And so we wanted to do a survey that would be reliable and extremely methodologically clear and sophisticated and properly done, that shed a clear light on what the connectivity problem really was.
Delve a little bit into how you did that research, maybe some of the background of how it was done. How did you connect with these people? I mean, obviously, you weren't necessarily just connecting with them online. Was it done through phone calls? Was it done through just what were some of your ideology or real world practices as you approached this research?
Well, Jessica, I have a PhD in social sciences. And so I spent years working in a research institute before I started OATS. And I know my way around the, you know, regression tables and sampling methodology and things like that. But I wanted to do a project here where it wasn't just OATS internal research, because in many cases, the most reliable studies are ones that bring in outside experts who are respected in the field and make sure that you're relying on really quality data. And so the most prominent researcher in the country who's an expert on broadband connectivity is a guy named John Horrigan, who in fact was the guy that did all the research behind the National Broadband Plan that was issued about 10 years ago. And he's a genuine expert in all of the data that comes particularly out of the census, which does annual surveys in the American Community Survey, asking people if they're online and then gathering additional information about their demographics. So we brought John Horrigan in as part of our research team. And we also reached out to a woman at Cornell University, professor named Erin York Cornwell, who's a national expert in using a database that's a multi-year, what they call a longitudinal database, that tracks information over a period of many years with the same population. So they continue to go back and ask them questions. And that population is over the age of 62. And so they're able to really examine the health and social outcomes related to being online. And luckily, that database also asks people if they have internet at home. And so Erin Cornwell was part of the research team, and we asked them to look at those data sets and for the first time say, first of all, who's online between young and old? And we divided it at 65 for the main population estimates that we were making, and then really delve in more deeply into what the contours of those you know, different levels of participation might look like in terms of the demographics, you know, who it is related to race and gender and other characteristics that we were interested in.
Well, for our listeners' benefit, I will be putting links to this report within the description of this podcast. So we're going to get into the findings a bit more, but you can find that in the description of this podcast as well. And one of those findings, really the top line headline, 22 million American seniors lack broadband access, which is another term for high-speed internet. That's about 42% of older Americans. And if you think about that in general terms, if I may pontificate a moment, that means that those 22 million seniors lack access to everything from government services to telehealth, the latter of which became especially critical during the pandemic when seniors really needed to limit their exposure to the coronavirus. Walter, I'm going to hand it to you for a moment again. To learn that number was so high, was that a bit alarming from the public health space? What was your takeaway from that?
Well, it was not only alarming, it was just unacceptable. Connectivity is a social justice issue. Our world increasingly requires us to rely on technology to meet our needs, yet because of cost and geographic location or a lack of learning resources, the most vulnerable members of our society are experiencing accelerated inequity. Creating equity here is important, not only in terms of health, but in all areas of society where inequity exists. From the report, lack of internet is a public health crisis. Medicaid enrollees are 2.7 times likely to be offline, and those with functional impairments are twice as likely to be offline.
Does understanding that fact that these vulnerable populations are even more or disproportionately affected, does that help, knowing the scope of it, does that help us tackle this issue from your point of view, Walter?
I think it does. Having a comprehensive understanding of the barrier we face is the first step in removing it. This report, however, goes beyond simply identifying the barrier. It creates a roadmap to address it through a set of recommendations to policymakers and practitioners. And the launch of Aging Connected, which is a national partnership campaign to bring over 1 million older adults online by 2022. Once connected, seniors can take advantage of the kinds of health technology that's critical today, such as telehealth and mobile apps that help people keep track of their health and well-being goals.
And Tom, from your point of view, working with older Americans, what it sounds like you've already come up with some solution-oriented approaches to dealing with those numbers. But what was your reaction to learn that it was that high? Did you expect it to be less or more, or was it not surprising?
I was shocked that it was as high as it came out to be. We know that a lot of people are not online, and there's lots of localized data that have suggested that the numbers could be very high. But until somebody did a national check here, we really weren't aware of quite the specific level of difference that existed. And it wasn't just that it's 42% of older people that can't access internet from home, broadband, but rather that the gap between young and old was 15 percentage points, which is a really big difference. And it means that, you know, that big difference between young and old translates into a really deep inequity in our society that's based on age. And it's not all explained by income or other characteristics. A lot of it simply is a predictor related to the fact that people are older and their social networks and sort of relationship with the technology innovations over the course of decades that these things have been coming into play have really led people to be kind of excluded from the digital age. And so, yeah, I was surprised that it was as high as 42%.
That digital exclusion, if you will, has some serious ramifications. Again, quoting from your summary of your report, more than 80% of COVID deaths in the U.S. have been older Americans, and your research estimates about 40% of them were unable to access needed online resources because they lacked that in-home internet. I have quoted that piece since I've read your study multiple times with talking with journalists and talking with even our internal committees working on telehealth, that this is such a serious problem that people, because they don't have access, you could even draw a line that they're losing their lives, that they're being isolated to such a degree that our neighbors are suffering. I get a little choked up. Tom, help our listeners understand how a lack of access can lead to disengagement and has such serious consequences.
Well, Jessica, I'm glad that you had that reaction because it's certainly been the one that I share. I get really emotional talking about this because we're effectively taking people's lives in our hands when we don't solve the technology problem. We're somehow treating this like it's a consumer choice, as if people should be buying more orange juice or something. And instead, what's happening is that we're setting up a system where a large portion of the population can't get information and access to communication. And when there's a disaster or a crisis, they're the most vulnerable and they're going to bear the burden. And we all know people that have died. I've had people in my family that have died. And I have to wonder, you know, with some of my relatives who passed away, you know, what would have been the case, for example, they're active in their churches. And I've been speaking to people quite a lot on Senior Planet who are part of our network and have been taking our classes. And one of the things that they're emphasizing is their ability to participate in religious services and share their spiritual experiences with, you know, congregations and churches and family members. And what if they didn't have to go to church that week because they could do it on Zoom? And maybe that extra trip that they had to make because they were not online was that one moment when they caught the disease. And what if that person had been able to connect from home? You know, my family lives primarily in a low-income community here in Brooklyn, and you know, we can't know for sure, but we've been taking people's lives in our hands, and it's really outrageous, and it's dispiriting that in 2021 we're still trying to solve the first step connectivity challenge for such a huge population. And I'm sorry to say, but it overlaps with a kind of trend in the United States of just acting as if ageism is not a problem. And I think we need to examine that question and ask ourselves, you know, how seriously we take the lives of older people when we're willing to, you know, treat this as a kind of minor or a side issue, when frankly, it should be central to our public health challenges. And for all of us, we're all going to be old eventually, and we all care about someone who's old. And the fact that the solution's right in front of us, we know how to solve this problem. We just haven't had the national will to do it yet.
Perhaps if there is any silver lining, maybe the pandemic has called attention to the fact that we all need to be connected. I think there's an awareness that I've been hearing that everybody needs to be connected. But yes, we do also need to address this ageism issue. Walter, how does the concept of loneliness among our senior citizens impact public health and the way that we perhaps approach addressing healthcare in general?
Well, I studied loneliness for a long time when I was at AARP. I did some work there focusing on it, but loneliness can kill you. It's the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And that's huge. Going beyond the increased risk of anxiety and depression that we normally associate with loneliness, a recent study by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine shows that isolation significantly increases a person's risk of premature death from all causes, including a 50% increased risk in dementia, a 29% increased risk of heart disease, and a 32% increased risk of stroke. Understanding the potential risk of loneliness and isolation to health outcomes makes addressing them a critical component of a public health response. So let's touch on the social justice implications. The lack of connectivity among older Americans is labeled a social justice crisis in the summary of the report. And if you look at the numbers, it does appear that way. Some stats again, older adults with less than a high school degree or income below $25,000 are 10 times more likely than the general population to be offline. And minorities are disproportionately impacted. Black and Latino seniors are more than 2.5 and 3.3 times more likely to be offline. Again, we are talking about populations that are all too often overlooked and not included.
And the impact of that is that we are not only seeing an issue where related to age, but we're also seeing a major issue related to low-income people, people who have less or lower, maybe don't have advanced degrees, and then minority populations that are already impacted in so many ways socially. Tom, how do you tackle that in addition to the age?
Well, Jessica, this is where the potential opportunity lies in this area, which is to say there are kind of two ways of coming at it. One is to argue that if we came up with a really strong federal strategy, effectively a subsidy program that could put all older adults online within, say, 12 months, where we decided that we were going to spend a moderate amount of money from a national standpoint, but enough to bring people online, the simple fact of reversing this, you know, inequitable distribution of broadband access cascades positively into all of these other areas where we are trying to solve for social inequities. So I hate to use the phrase silver bullet, but it's kind of in a way a real chance to solve a portion or address a portion of a lot of different social justice sort of concerns that we have as a society with one really effective kind of empowering act that we are capable of taking on. And then the other side of this is that when we make the internet available for people, we need to help them get trained and get supported in making educated decisions about their device choices and about how to use the technology and how to make it relevant to their own lives. And that's where all of these civic engagement organizations around the country can play a role. And so it's not simply about massive federal action to provide a subsidy. It's really got to be a public and private partnership here where groups like Humana and the Humana Foundation can work together with nonprofits like OATS and all of the senior centers around the country and libraries and groups that are currently doing training. But those local organizations have what we call cultural competencies that relate to certain populations. So there are groups that focus on African-American communities, groups that focus on rural seniors and rural individuals that may be isolated, groups that work on people with disabilities. And each of those organizations has special connections and knowledge of the issues that are relevant to their population that they're serving and can translate this technology opportunity into maximum relevance and training and support. And I think that creates an opportunity to just really improve our civic culture in the United States, which is really so sorely needed right now.
It is needed. It is some healing is needed and some positive action and impact is needed. I will say, just speaking for Connected Nation for a moment, we do approach it the issue of connectivity in three buckets: access, adoption, and use, which address some of those things you're talking about, understanding how to use it. So you may have internet there, but I don't have a device. I don't even know what to do with it. So it is important to address all of those things. Now that we have a better understanding of it, you kind of answered this a little bit, Tom, with the idea that we need to work collaboratively and we need to work across areas that we understand. But what are some other, I know you mentioned Aging Connected and Walter did as well, but can you tell us a little bit about what that is and maybe help us guide our listeners if there's someone they want to help or if there's some way they want to take part to what your organization is doing nationally?
Sure. I'm happy to talk about that. First of all, I want to mention and commend Walter and his team for supporting this program. You know, I've been running a nonprofit for 16 years, and a lot of foundations are, and a lot of corporate funders are in a position of having to satisfy a lot of different organizations that are looking for funding. And it's rare to find an organization that's going to commit to these outcomes and say, we want to do what, we want to make sure that we have the maximum impact and measurable results from our investments. And so our collaboration with Walter and the people at Humana Foundation, Bruce Broussard is the chief executive officer over there, has been all about making sure that we build a model for change. And so Aging Connected is really focused on that impact approach. And so for the first part of it is you know, obviously the report, getting clarity on what's going on. Now, the second part of it is looking for the levers that we can push to make change. And the first one of those is public policy. And the first one of those is that the federal government recently passed an initiative called the Emergency Broadband Benefit. It was part of the stimulus package passed back in December. It's currently being designed the rules are being written by the Federal Communications Commission. There's a comments period that we're weighing in on and working to help shape how they articulate that program. But that will provide a $50 a month subsidy for low-income people to access the internet for the first time in American history. They've never done something like this. And if we can make sure that older people are eligible and maximally eligible for that subsidy, it can help seniors get online in large numbers. It's a subsidy that's going to be available across the age and you know, demographic scale to some degree. It's currently targeted at lower income individuals. But our position is that we should make sure that for seniors, it's as widely available, and that there's an effort to make the connections for people that can help with, you know, what you were talking about, Jessica, earlier, this idea that it's not just about the access, but it's also about the adoption and the use part of the equation, so that we can activate that $50 a month subsidy and make sure that millions of older adults are able to take advantage of it right now. So we've created a website called agingconnected.org, and agingconnected.org is a place where people can go and put in a zip code and learn about what kinds of low-cost offerings may be available in their communities right now. And as soon as that federal emergency broadband benefit is available, which should be in the next few months, we're hoping to be able to connect our site right to that program so that people can get that subsidy and get, we think of the subsidy as a little boost for first-time users, a chance to reduce the cost for their first couple of months. And then once they're up and running, we can, you know, they can decide if they want to keep paying for the internet over time or not, but at least it gives them a chance to understand the value proposition. So that's the first step for us.
That's a hefty step for sure. Walter, what would you like to see happen now that you have a better understanding, or now that we all have a better understanding of the scope and of this problem and this issue?
Well, as I touched on earlier, the foundation, the Humana Foundation, believes our investments should have meaningful and measurable results, which is why we are so excited for the launch of the Aging Connected campaign and reaching the goal of over a million older adults online by 2022. We hope that reaching this goal will be the first of many results we will see in closing the digital divide in older adults and ultimately improving health equity and outcomes.
That's, again, there's a lot of work to be done. And this study, it is impactful. And I hope that continue to get the word out about it. Before I close and let you go, anything else that we should have touched on from this study? Maybe some final thoughts to leave us with? Maybe, Tom, I'll begin with you and then we can hand it off to Walter.
Sure, Jessica. I think that the study also identified the sort of the wide disparities that are existing by geography in terms of how many older adults are online and what the gap is between young and old in America. We noticed that, for example, in the past, the programs that have existed to help lower income people get online are almost entirely run by private telecommunications companies that negotiate them in exchange for regulatory compliance advantages. And you know, it's not a great way to run a subsidy program nationally, but it's the only game in town. And the telecoms companies have been pretty active in trying to help provide affordable access where it's been negotiated properly. And so we found that Comcast, for example, has a program called Internet Essentials that's available to over 50% of seniors in their service areas. And so that's a huge opportunity that only two-thirds of the people that live in those areas appear to be taking advantage of. So a very large number of people are able to sign up for things in Comcast areas. And in contrast to other states that have different telecommunications companies, may have no low-cost offerings or programs that are only available for 2% of older adults. So we did a map in our survey showing the age related technology gap around the country. And we found a state like Alaska has a pretty low gap where seniors and younger people are relatively comparable in terms of broadband access. They're only about 5 points apart, 5 percentage points. But in a place like Washington, D.C., there's a 25% gap, which means there's a real emergency. Like right now, if I was going to put money into something and I was going to find a place to do this work, I would like go to Washington, D.C. and say, we know the community access is there. And we know that, 25% higher percentage of younger people are online. So what can we do to equalize that and get the older folks to be adopting right now? And other places that, you know, the Rust Belt seems to be an area where that's also really prevalent. Some of the states up in the Midwest and other areas where we're getting 20 percentage point gaps between young and old. So it really does point to this geographic disparity and the weakness of relying on simply a private sector kind of polyglot approach to solving the problem. We need a unified national strategy, and that's what we're pushing for.
And when just to emphasize that, when you say percentage points, you're talking in each of these cities, hundreds of thousands of people, and across the country, millions. That impacts.
We're talking about, if you look at a state like Nebraska that has a 21% gap, that could translate into 500,000 people just in that one state. So we're looking at real large numbers and other states that are doing better. You know, interestingly, like the Southwest, Nevada and Arizona are down at a 10% gap. So they're doing a little bit better, perhaps because they have, different patterns of residential population density or different kinds of providers that have reached out more to the older adult communities. But yeah, this problem is concentrated geographically in certain states. If 20 million, 21 million older adults are offline, and the gap translates into about 6.8 million, I think, between young and old, if we were to equalize it, we have a lot of work to do to start bringing people online. And low hanging fruit, right? There are places where there is connectivity access, as you at Connected Nation have pointed out, which is the first step, but we just haven't put the pieces of the puzzle together to create that adoption transition for people yet.
And Walter, what are some final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with, or anything that we didn't touch on that you thought we should have?
Sure. First of all, I'd like to thank you. I think it's important for us to use platforms like this to get this message out and to share the story. So I want to thank you for allowing us to do that. Our most cherished population, seniors, are vulnerable because they are experiencing accelerated inequity. Everyone belongs in a connected nation, and creating equity for them is important to their health.
Ah, you used our tagline. We agree with that 100%. Well, we're going to leave it on that then. I really appreciate you both taking the time to first invest in doing this very important research, and second, to take time to discuss and share with us these findings. My thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica.
Again, our guests today were the CEO of the Humana Foundation, Walter Woods, and the founder and executive director of Older Adults Technology Services, Dr. Tom Camber. The two organizations partnered to produce a new report called Aging Connected, Closing the Connectivity Gap for Older Americans. You can find a link to that report in the description of this podcast. I'm Jessica Denson. Thanks for listening to Connected Nation. If you like our show and want to know more about us, head to connectednation.org or look for the latest episodes of Connected Nation on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Pandora, or Spotify.